Welcome to Danger Explosion.
Something you feel you be earning my respect. You do not scare me, no, you are not a threat. Anyone that want it, they can get it in a flash, no sweat. If you're gonna talk on my name, be saying with your chest. Got my team on deck, taking out all pawns on my night, got your queen in check, mate. Don't be getting nigga feelings. All I do is kill shit, even when I'm chillin'. I'm Jay-Z on a bad day, Shakespeare on my worst days. Never been a punk, trust you can get it in the worst way. Fuck it, let me get a birthday cake and it ain't even my birthday. Cause when I switch, then they wanna say that I'm a bitch.
You're not listening, you're not listening. I said it with my chest and I don't care.
But today our guest is Chris Brakeen. Hello, Chris. How are you doing?
Hi. Hi there. It's good, good to be here.
Good. Yeah, good to have you on. And Brent, as usual, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm fantastic. A little cold today.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good.
Nice. Good to hear.
Not that I have a cold. I'm saying the temperature was cold.
The temperature is cold. Good. Well, I was worried about your health, but now I'm glad you're good as well. So, but Chris, I know you. This is actually my first time talking to you. I've known you face to face through the internet for about 5 minutes now, so good to meet you.
Good to meet you.
and I don't know how I came across you. I feel like we had mutual friends, or I don't remember how I came across you, but I know you mostly from Facebook and your website or blog. I want to refer to it the right way, but writing about writing, right?
Yeah.
And at least as far as Facebook goes, you're probably my favorite person on Facebook as far as sharing like memes and stuff that kind of it aligns like almost exactly with me politically, like pretty much anything you post or anything you say, which there have been lots of times where you've written something out and I've been like, oh, that's exactly what I'm thinking, but said in a much more eloquent way than I could ever put it. So I don't know. So I just want you to know it. And my kids are yelling in the background. But yeah, so that's how I know you. So I guess I just kind of want to start from, you know, what you're up to now as far as writing about writing goes, and just kind of your journey and how you know, your interest in writing and where that came from and where you came from, how you got started with that.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you. It's really nice to hear that once in a while. You know, I get a lot of hate mail and stuff, so catching the good stuff once in a while is really nice. So I can remember wanting to be a writer in fourth grade. So I was 10. Mm-hmm. And we got this weird assignment where we had the start of a paragraph and we had to finish it. And I took it away and wrote like 10 pages and it was great. And I wanted to chase that feeling forever. And you know, there were many, many, many years of wanting to be a writer, but not writing so much. In my 30s, I went back to school, pursued a creative writing major. And when I was in school, a lot of the people that we were talking to had sort of like there was this break in the like ideology of how to make money writing.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened right around my age, you know, which at the time was about 35. Mm-hmm. And everybody who was older was this like old guard, you know, it's going to be so hard, you'll never make it, you know, it's, you know, you'll get one story published after you toil for 10 years and you have to do it by writing short stories and you get your cover letter going and then you might get a book deal, you know. And they were just, you know, kind of rigid about that. And everybody younger than 35 was like, yeah, I have, you know, 15 income streams I cobbled together, but I'm mostly writing, you know.
And,
you know, they're like, I work one day a week as a bartender, but, you know, mostly I'm writing.
Right.
And so it just kind of occurred to me that, like, they did not really know what was, like, the old guard did not know how computers were changing things. Mm-hmm. Like, they just did not get it. And what a huge change it was going to be. And so, you know, I got my degree, I finished up, and I decided that, you know, the best way to kind of get an audience for the writing I eventually wanted to do, the fiction I eventually wanted to do, would be to start a blog or something. And I was literally like, what would I blog about? I don't know how to do anything. And then I was like, wait a second, I just got a degree. I do know how to do one thing. So, yeah, I mean, this is my version of, you know, a cooking blog or something. It's like, I can't.
Right. You're like, yeah, the base of knowledge I have is about writing. So,
yeah, been doing this for years. And yeah, so.
So how long is that? How long have you when did that website go up? How long has it been? Have you been doing that?
It went up early 2012.
Okay.
So I'm closing in on a decade. And there's been a lot of changes. Some of them I'm more comfortable with, you know, and some are, I wish I could go back a little bit and do some of the old stuff. You know, I've had to roll with some punches. Like, the pandemic would be a good example. You know, I've got this, couple of clients, I nanny for their kids. You know, right before the pandemic started, it was great. 10 hours a week, you know, mm-hmm. left me so much time to write, and it was wonderful. And then the pandemic hit, and I'm the only nanny they knew that could pod with them.
All right.
and not bring in, you know, 15 other people worth of exposure. And one of them has had cancer. So they went through chemo and radiation. They're immunocompromised. So it had to be me. And all of a sudden I'm getting like way more hours than I can handle. And so like the quality of my blogging goes down,
right?
You know? Yeah. So I really want to get back to some of the old ways that I, did stuff, but for the most part it stayed pretty steady. You know, I try to keep a post going up just about every day or every weekday.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, for 12 years, so
nice.
It adds up.
Yeah.
Where are you from, Chris?
Like, originally, or where am I sitting right now?
I would actually like to know both. Back in the fourth grade, where were you? Yeah, where were you?
Okay, so If you roll the tape all the way back, I was born in Indiana in the Midwest, and that's where my parents went to graduate school. But then we came out here because that's where there was a teaching position for my stepdad. So the fourth grade, I would have been in Los Angeles, or at least that area, San Fernando Valley and stuff. And then I came up here when I was in my early 20s, and that would be to the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area.
Okay. Nice.
And I've been here ever since. So
nice. I love that area.
Yeah.
That was my favorite vacation.
Really? Yeah. It's funny. I have gone to so few vacation spots because, you know,
yeah.
It's always like, well, I'll get to it eventually, and I never do, but...
Right. Yeah, I've been out there a couple times.
I've never seen anyone make so much money off a sweater before.
Oh, man.
When I went to San Francisco.
Yeah.
Everyone's like freezing. And these people are just like slinging sweatshirts, man. It's awesome.
Nice. Nice. Well, and that's because I'm from Bloomington, Indiana, originally. That's where I was born and grew up and everything. And then I'm in the Chicago area now for about maybe 5 years now, 5.5. And then Brent's still in Indiana. So
yeah, I'm in Indianapolis. Yeah.
Do you know where Terre Haute is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's where I was born.
Okay.
Nice.
And I don't actually know where it is. I know it's in Aurora County,
it's where they execute everybody, right?
Oh, that's great. What a wonderful birthright.
Sorry, well, hopefully we'll see fewer of those now.
Yeah.
but But yeah, so how are you feeling post election, now that Biden's actually inaugurated and it's kind of a done deal? How are you feeling? What is it, a week in now, a little over a week?
Yeah. It's like our first full week.
Yeah.
You know, I share, I don't, you know, one of the things I've noticed on my Facebook wall is that it fairly accurately represents kind of my own like conflicted reaction to this. I don't think Biden's the greatest president. I think there's a long way to go, especially on certain progressive goals.
Right.
Is so much more comfortable right now, you know, when there's not just a horrifying thing happening every single morning.
Right.
You know, you just wake up to what's it going to be today, you know?
Yeah. When I never really understood that, just that kind of accelerationism, you know, just that things always have to get worse to get better. Like people will, you know, when they're really suffering, when things really get bad, that's when people will rise up and change things. And I don't know where that comes from. Because I feel like it's easier for me and everyone I know to focus on stuff and be politically active and give to grassroots organizations and be involved and you know, do phone banks or door-to-door canvassing or whatever, when you're not, like, wondering where your next meal is coming from. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like,
absolutely.
So
yeah, I get where some of the, you know, like far leftist kind of rhetoric and desire to check out comes from, but I don't share it. Like I can sort of empathize with that position, but I really think that like any revolution that is going to happen physically is going to have, you know, like, I don't think the people that are calling for it are necessarily going to be the ones most hurt by it. So,
right. Right. Well, and that's the thing, because obviously things need to drastically change, and there are lots of, and Democrats are not as progressive as they need to be on many, many, many issues, but.
Right.
But yeah, I think, at least for me, just like checking completely out of government and politics. For me, it feels like and again, like you said, I can understand the desire to do that. And I went through a period where I was there. I was at that point, you know what I mean? But I just don't, I feel like any true change is going to have to be more creative than destructive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I
feel like, I don't know if you're, if you're willing to just let everything collapse and hope that some kind of beautiful phoenix emerges from the ashes. And the funny thing for me is like the people who are hoping for that are also like the same people who are like, and I'm pretty much anti-war completely. Like, you know, maybe there was a reason for us to get involved in World War II. Like maybe, but even like, you know, even that, like I'm pretty much anti-war. But, you know, these people who are hardcore anti-war are a lot of times the first people to call for this kind of like complete systemic collapse. And it's like, you know, the collateral damage. I don't know. How can you be callous about this collateral damage and then be so worried over here about this other like military collateral damage? It's like,
right.
You know what I mean? It's like people are real, actual people are getting hurt and dying. I don't know. It seems to be a disconnect there for me.
Yeah. I think one of the important things, and like AOC is really good at this, is to, you first have to offer people like an alternative vision.
Right.
You can't just show up and hate everything the way it is. You know, if you give somebody an alternative to work towards, then, you know, there can be some progress. But then also, you know, it's just like you said, you know, the idea that I feel like a lot of those people need to kind of take a tour around the country, and realize that they're not going to get what they want unless they are willing to have an authoritarian minority rule over Americans until they do a sustained ground campaign that wins the hearts and minds of lots and lots of people.
Right.
You know, which you don't get just by being cranky on the internet and, you know, sharing guillotine memes, which, don't get me wrong, some of them are hilarious.
Right,
but...
yeah, there can be a lot of fun. Yeah.
But
yeah.
That can't be your whole praxis.
All right, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, eat the rich in the sheets, you know, yeah. Grassroots canvassing on the streets, you know.
Exactly.
I assume you've been reading about the what is it, GameStop, that interesting shit going on the past couple days?
I have. I've kept up on it a little bit. I mean, what do I think about it?
Yeah.
Didn't they say it was like what Occupy Wall Street should have been? Is that like the buzz thing?
I'm a little reluctant to put the narrative into this, like, underdog screws hedge fund billionaires completely. Like, I'm so glad they're getting theirs, but it feels a little bit like the people doing it are also, they have plenty of disposable income,
right.
And they're on this Reddit that is, like, you know, mostly white guys, and, you know, yeah, they're screwing the hedge fund managers, but I feel a little bit like I'm watching The Punisher, and it's like, this is satisfying, but also that was extrajudicial murder, and, you know, in practice, I sort of have a problem with it.
Right. That makes sense.
That was perfect.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, like, and the other thing is now that the story's gone mainstream, I think people are going to get hurt.
Yeah.
Because the last people through are going to pay way too much for this valueless stock. And I just know we're going to hear about people dropping their life savings into it and shit. And
right.
it's going to be a travesty by the time it's all done.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like one of those, like, like, I've got, like, Facebook friends in their 30s who, like, they sell, like, makeup off their Facebook friends. We're like, LuLaRoe dresses or whatever. And it's like, that passes, and then, like, there's always a sad post where they're, like, trying to get rid of boxes of this shit.
Right.
Is it similar? Is that, like, I'm just learning about it today.
The letdown from a pyramid scheme or something. Yeah.
That's yeah. Funny. Where are all the Wall Street pyramid schemes? I feel like that's something I should, like, friends hitting me up from high school being like, hey, you know, hey, how's it going? Good to catch up. Anyway, I got these stocks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let me get it out of the trunk of the car. I'll be right back.
Can I interest you in some GameStop?
Yeah. I'll give you some samples. First couple shares are free.
Right.
But, yeah, no, that makes sense.
Here.
I mean, if it would lead to some kind of examination of the system as a whole, and, like, what this kind of market manipulation and shorting stocks does, like, that I don't know that it'll have that effect, though. I think you're right.
I hope it does that. I mean, I you know, they stop that particular type of investment in 2008, and then Wall Street kind of cajoled lawmakers into putting it back in, and, you know, they're basically betting on a company to fail.
Right. Yeah.
It's basically gambling that the company will fail, and you know, it's all, and you know, the other thing is there was just some really unconscionable behavior when they realized what was happening to try and stop people from essentially
participating.
Yeah.
Which that right there, like, and it's a complex thing that I feel like I barely have any understanding of, but for anybody listening who hasn't seen the movie The Big Short, I don't know. I remember when that came out and it was kind of like eye-opening for me to be like, oh, okay, I kind of understand what this is about, you know. I forget where my train of thought was going with that, but
and then you watched The Wolf of Wall Street and there was that whole period of time where you try to get lewds.
Yeah. And I was just like,
oh, anymore, man.
Just like beating my chest with Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, they took Matthew McConaughey's character out of there so quick. It was like Drew Barrymore in Scream, you know? She gets knifed in the beginning and she's on the fucking box, you know, when you go to the video store.
Right. You're like, oh.
I aged myself a whole lot with that one.
Yeah. You just let it all hang out there.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, spoiler alert for Children of Men, if anybody hasn't seen that by now, but who was in that? Was Jodie Foster in that? Or
you mean?
Or no,
Mel?
Julianne Moore.
Yeah, Julianne Moore.
Julianne Moore.
Oh yeah, where the people can't have babies anymore.
Yeah.
Or the women.
Yeah.
Because that's who has the babies.
Well, yeah. And she gets shot like, I don't know. It's like 20, 30 minutes into the movie, they're driving and she's just like, just gone.
Well, she doesn't even get introduced until like 20 minutes into the movie or something like that.
Yeah. Right.
Then she has like a little bit. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. It's always fun when they do that. Just take people out.
Yeah, Brent, I think the worst dating you did with the Scream thing is, you know, the Gen Zers are going to be like, box? What box? You're like,
right. Right.
That's right.
You're like, Drew Barrymore was on the box. And they're going to be like, on the box? What?
Yeah.
They'll be like, he must be confusing that movie with Seven or something, you know? That was Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah. I used to love Blockbuster Video and going to all those places, man. Like, Corey and I have famously interviewed Mr. T at one.
That's true. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. I talked about this before. Yeah. It was fantastic. Yeah.
It was like,
I've even got a video of it.
Yeah.
You would be like the sixth or seventh people that I know who have run into him, but I've never seen him outside of TV or anything.
Yeah.
Like, apparently, I'm just like, I only have encountered him by proxy.
Well, it's only a matter of time. It's only a matter of time until the T catches up.
He's going to find you, man. Sure. He's going to find you.
But we saw... So,
I was like, what? Sorry.
Oh, no, I was just like worried that it's all, instead of being like, that's kind of cool, it's like, it's all part of a pattern. He's hunting me.
No, but he was, for whatever reason, he was at a Blockbuster Video in Bloomington, Indiana, just like making an appearance and signing autographs like 20 years ago, I think. It was probably about 20 years ago.
Yeah, I think it was that he knew the manager. Like, they were like roommates. Because remember, like, we conned like the local radio station DJ into like talking to us because we said we were from the high school's media department.
Okay.
Then she kind of talked to us for a little bit.
Oh yeah, shit. Damn, yeah. That damn, I forgot about that. But yeah.
Pam Thrash. That was that lady.
Pam Thrash, yes. That's funny. But so he was there just like shaking hands and signing autographs and just like dripping sweat. He was just like working so hard. And then like these two asshole like high school kids walk up to him with a Sony Handycam and we're just like yelling yelling questions at him. Just like a couple
of... allowing anyone in the line anymore.
Yeah.
How close we can get to him. It's a Blockbuster fucking video. Like, there's not like security or anything. He's like walking real close to him.
Yeah. Cause the line was like wrapped around the building and out the door. And so we didn't get in the line. We just walked in the Blockbuster Video and we were like one aisle away from, there was like a rack of movies in between us and Mr. T.
So, yeah, like Scream 1 and 2.
And then Mr. T.
That dates us a little bit. Just 1 and 2.
Yeah. But so like these two asshole kids are just like yelling questions at him. Like, what's the T stand for? Like this. And he, he is such a, like, at least at that moment, he was so good-natured, and he was, like, totally in entertainment mode, taking pictures, signing autographs, answering our questions, which he did not have to do. And then at one point, the last question I think Brent asked him, he was like, "Hey, Mr. T, whatever happened to all your cereal?" Right? And so Mr. T immediately, without missing a beat, like, looks up from signing an autograph, like, looks at us, and he was like, "It was so good, everybody ate it all up." It was just
perfect.
Yeah, it was so good.
So silly. Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, it was,
I'll dig that tape up soon, I promise. Get that out to you.
Yeah, but so do you get a? So now, are you still nannying right now? Are you still pretty busy with that, Chris?
Yeah. So. Two jobs right now. I work about 70 hours a week most weeks. So.
Whoa. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, did you maybe before COVID, did you ever, were you working on any fiction or anything else besides writing about writing that other people might be, any links or anything you could provide that people might be interested in going and checking out?
No, I've got some fiction at the website, at the blog. It's all the way in down in the menus. It's called "And Sometimes Writing," but yeah, I was working on a book, and then the airlock doors came down, pretty much.
Right.
You know, the book was going okay. There were some setbacks in my personal life. I went through a pretty major breakup, and, you know, had to figure out a way to find a second income pretty fast. But then, I was starting to get make some progress on that, some real progress, and then COVID happened. So I'm basically sitting around at this point, sucking nanny money away for this moment when enough people have vaccine in their arm that I can go back to more full-time writing.
Right. And you can dump all that money in GameStop. Right?
Right. What you put in the universe always plays out. Don't let karma hit you on the way out. Hey yo, hey yo. One day I'ma fly your way, but until then I live the words on the page. My frame of mind chose all these railroads that's intricate. My train of thought blazing through road rails infinite. But one day I'ma fly your way, but until then I live the words on the page. My frame of mind chose all these railroads that's intricate.
I've done a lot of like comedy and theater and acting, right? So a lot of the stuff I've done entertainment wise is like more on stage. But I was, I started a theater group with a couple people in 2012. So that, because I've always kind of written, but that's, but I really started writing a lot more, mostly for the stage, right? Like stage plays and stuff. But so now with COVID and everything, I'm writing a lot more, just like prose and stuff that's not for people on stage. And I also like it kind of coincides with a couple podcasts I started listening to this year that are focused on Stephen King, right? So I've been like very heavily influenced by just like I reread his book on writing, you know. So so especially this past year, I've like just like learned a lot from him and his method of writing or whatever. And I was just curious. One of the things for me like that's can be difficult at times is like trying to set a pattern and just like disciplining myself to make sure I sit down and actually do the writing, you know. So is that, do you have some kind of structure or pattern, or what's kind of your method that works for you to actually put the words on page, which seems to be the hardest thing for a lot of people to do, you know?
Sure. I tell people there's sort of two paths they can take. And one of them is a lot more front loaded in terms of effort and energy, but it ends up being a little more flexible in the end. The first way, the sort of easy way, is to try and sit down at the same time every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and once you start doing that for a number of days, like, your creativity will kick up before you start the work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you'll be getting ideas, you know, 20-30 minutes before your session starts.
Right.
And that's I think sort of the easiest way to do that, is to sit down at the same time every day and try to block out, you know, however much time. Everybody's got different goals.
Right.
You know, if your goal is to be a working writer, it's 6 or 7 or 8 hours. And if your goal is to, you know, finish a short story in a couple of months, it might only be an hour.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But you sit down, you do the work, and the inspiration comes. And that's really hard for people,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like, even, you know, this world is just not built for, okay, it's my writing time.
Right, yeah.
You know, yeah. People have jobs with weird, flexible schedules, and, you know, it's just not that easy for everyone to do that. The other way, which is the way that's, like, much more front-loaded, I kind of describe this on my blog in a couple of places, but you basically, you go through this, it's almost like boot camp. I didn't invent it. Somebody named Dorothea Brand wrote this thing out in a book called Being a Writer, like 100 years ago. And you start in the morning, and you start doing these free writes in the morning. It can't be on anything you're doing already. You just write whatever comes into your head. And then when you, as you do that, your sort of capacity to keep writing till you slow down,
mm-hmm.
just about doubles. And then what you want to do is take a half an hour and float it around in the day and sit down at a different half an hour every day, and do 30 minutes exactly of writing. And that second part is so hard, because you're going to think, you know, if I said 2:30, you're going to be like, well, what's the difference between 2:30 to 3 or 2:45 to 3:15, right?
Right?
Same difference. It's still a half an hour. Like, you have to do it right then, right when you do it, no matter what. And it, like, consider it a debt of honor. Almost, unless you're dying, like, you know, unless you're in an ambulance on the way to the hospital, you've got to sit down and do this right. And what that does is it creates this ability to just sit down and pull the words up right away. So mm-hmm. once you've got that sort of core discipline, you get much, much, much better at sitting down, and then just the words come. Like,
yeah.
You're like, this is what I'm working on. Oh, there they are, you know. And of course, the best way to do it is both. Like, if you have done that sort of exercise regimen thing where you sit down and it works, and you're sitting down at the same time every day, it's usually like, you know, I mean, my problem is I don't have enough time, and like I'm never going to finish everything I want to write. Like, I have too many ideas, and right. like, I sit down and it's just, blah, you know, for however long. And I always close the computer wishing I had, you know, 4 more hours or, you know, 4 more hours of consciousness in me.
Right.
And, you know, looking forward to tomorrow.
Yeah.
Which is
can I ask you a question?
Place to be, right? Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, sorry. If you had more to say, I'm sure you've gone against those rules in the past and have just gone like gotten the zone. We're talking marathon writing. Like, what do you think, like, the longest you ever sat and just wrote, like, where you were just like, it was like spilling out of you, like you poured over a glass of water.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, the only time you would stop and be done is when you're doing that 30 minutes thing, because that's like training. It's like weight training or something. But when I am just sort of regularly writing, and I'll sit down in the morning and, you know, try to at least put in 4 to 6 hours. And that's kind of the, you know, that's where it starts. And some days, you know, it's just not coming. And at 3 hours, I'm like, fuck this. I am done. You know, this is just not happening. But like you said, if you want to know the longest I have ever gone,
yes,
it would be probably 17 hours.
Jesus Christ, man.
I woke up, sat down like I always do, and I didn't stop. Like I went and got snacks from the kitchen, and I just went. And eventually, I was like, I'm too tired to keep doing this. I have to sleep.
Wow. Okay, I've got one more for you.
Okay.
I mean, I've got others, but just in the chamber, I had these two.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. In the 36 chambers.
Here we go. Oh, we'll no, take. Not got ODB on the shirt. Nice.
Nice.
Yeah. This is a personal question about writing utensils. Like, mm-hmm. What do you think? And I've asked this to plenty of people because I always like hearing the answer. What is the best pen?
I don't have a best pen.
Good answer. Okay.
Yeah, I write freehand so infrequently that
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I use computers mostly, and when I do write freehand, it's always in pencil.
Nice.
And I do have a favorite pencil, though, and it's a shame, too, because it's getting harder to find. I do not like the 0.7 lead that you find everywhere these days. I have to special order the 0.5 lead because it makes thinner markings and they're easier to erase and stuff. So
0.5, man, I like it.
Yeah, so that's pretty close. I am persnickety about my pencil lead. So
I teach math, and I like for math I like the thicker. Okay. I think it's the point nine.
Mm.
It's good. Doesn't break in the mechanical pencil thing. Yeah.
Huh. See, I've always like mechanical pencils. I can do okay, but like regular pencils, something about just like scrawling on it feels like nails on a chalkboard almost to me. Like
I don't like regular pencils at all.
Yeah, I've always preferred pens.
They feel too dull within just minutes, and I'm like, I gotta go sharpen this. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I once saw a hack video where they were taking these like pens that cost like thousands of dollars, mm-hmm. but you could buy the ink inserts for like $20, and they were like, and they could create like the exact same thing for like pennies. Mm-hmm. You create like this like $1,000 pen, like just using the ink inserts for like $30. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I've got at my last job. They gave us like company pens, right? And I switched jobs in November. But the pens they gave us were so nice, like, and my new company hasn't sent me any pens or anything. So I still like use the old pens, and when they run out of ink, I'll like change the ink inside, you know?
Oh, nice.
But so like sometimes I'll be like on, you know, doing, cause a lot of what I do is like in Skype meetings and conference calls all day. And I'll find myself just like twirling the pen in front of the camera or whatever, and I'm like, oh shit, you know, I'm like,
like enemy company,
right? Yeah, like, competition.
Yeah, like, casually, subliminally turning them on to
right.
Old company.
Yeah, exactly.
What a good idea.
Yeah.
GameStop is written on your big pen.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, you're fired for corporate espionage. I'm like, no, I swear, I just like the pen, that's all.
But you're right though, in a way, like the weight of a pen.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's very important. I have ADD, and I have to fidget, and it really helps me. My fidget is always a pen,
mm-hmm.
and I do the trick where you flip it around your thumb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can twirl it, the like drum person. It's like the one pencil. Yeah, right on. Yeah. Like I got to twirl it, and if the weight is off, I won't. It's dead to me.
Right.
Yeah.
Just right in the trash.
Yep.
No, I feel like people should chase their affectations if they help, but you know, I think the thing I see the most as like a working writer who's often gets sort of pressed for how do you make it by, you know, more, you know, ambitious writers who aren't making money or their career isn't where they want it to be. It's like sometimes I see them getting caught up in that. You know, it's like, I can't write without my pen. And it's like, yeah, you can, you know, like you don't want to, and it's less comfortable. And I would give you your pen if I could, but you know, like ooh, sometimes.
Can I guess why that is maybe? Is it like the speed of like, of which like synapses is maybe fire in your brain? They're just so used to like that then speed of whatever utensil they're using writing in that. They could probably type a lot faster than you can write with a utensil. And so that maybe that's just like too quick, like slipping on a cartoon banana peel.
Well, we still think way faster than we type.
Right.
And sure. We definitely think faster than we free write. Mm-hmm. I knew this once, and I'm going to get the exact number wrong, but I think it's around 600 words a minute we can think. And they know that because when you're translating sign language, that's about the cap out of people's ability. Like they can do that for about 10 or 15 minutes and then they need to trade out with someone, know, because it's so intense. It's right at the peak of what we can do. But we can only type, like maybe if you're really, really good, 100 words per minute. So you're thinking 500 words a minute faster than you can write.
Right.
You know, that's why writing is recursive. Like sitting down and actually just typing anything and writing anything will create more creativity and sort of feed in on itself. And pretty soon you're off to the races.
Well, and that's kind of what I've gathered from anybody, like whether it's like Stephen King, like I mentioned, I think he starts in the morning and he doesn't stop until he has 2,000 words, right?
Right.
Whether that takes him like a couple hours or whether it takes him like 10 hours, you know, he's just having an off day. Like he doesn't stop, you know, he has the he has the luxury to not have to do anything else too.
I mean, there's two things about him. Number one, he's bananas.
Right.
Like he published a book. By the time this podcast is over, he will have published a book.
Another one, yeah. he had to create a second identity to publish the amount of books he was writing, yeah.
And almost, like, even professional writers, even people who are working writers, I've never seen anybody go that hard and fast at it.
Yeah.
Like, he is off the hook.
Right.
But you're right. He also has the ability to, you know, if he needs to sit around and keep writing till 2 or 3 in the afternoon.
How many pages is 2,000 words?
About 10.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. But I think, not only him, but I, you know, from anybody, it was so, who was it? For some reason, Kafka's popping up in my head. I don't think some writer that's not a current modern writer, you know, he would carve out like a couple hours in the morning before he had to go into whatever day job, and he would fill that time. And even like if he would finish a story with 10 minutes left in his time, then he would like set that story aside, pull out the next page, and you know, like he's got 10 minutes to start the next story, you know, like those 10 minutes will not be wasted, you know. So I think just whatever I don't know that the form of discipline matters as much as just like having, you know.
Yeah, that. Absolutely. I think one of the things that like new writers sort of, I think that one of the pitfalls they fall into is not creating their own magic, like their own sort of writing spellcraft. You know, they ask, like, oh, established writer, teach me the way. And it's like I can tell you what works for me, but not, I can't tell you what's going to work for you, you know? And for absolutely, for some people, it's like time. And for some people, it's a word count. And for me, I tend to, I get things done. And that feeds into my ADD real well. you know, if I have a one thing I need to do or two things I need to do, sometimes I knock those out, and I have a whole day to go walk and play Fallout 4 and do whatever I want. And some days I am still fucking sitting there at 10 p.m. at night going, come on, Chris, let's finish this last thing up so I can go to bed, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I just want to say, I think you just said the most unintentionally badass thing that anyone may have ever said on this podcast. Like, for some people, it's time. For some people, it's word count. For me, I get shit done.
Hey, I didn't mean it.
No, I love it. I love it.
Like, you're done, but it's my project.
Right.
Like, damn. This dude is a meat machine. Yeah.
Kind of shift gears a little bit. I know, Brent, you said you had a story or something you wanted to share. You texted me the other day. You said you had some unbelievable story.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
This is a story that at the end of it we can discuss the weirdness of it. But what I'm about to tell you verbatim fucking happened. And I swear to God, I'm not. My favorite kinds of stories are the ones that are you don't have to embellish on anything. This happened last Saturday.
Okay.
So to preface the story?
Yeah.
Preface the story? Sorry. I'm prefacing the shit out of this. It's now preface. My kids, they love packages being delivered, right? Since we've been in quarantine, we would go to a place called Meijer before quarantine. It's like Walmart. Okay. So you get your groceries and there's a whole shopping center thing. So I don't go there anymore. I just go to Kroger, In-N-Out, or I get my groceries and the parking lot. They deliver them out to the parking lot.
Right, yeah.
So all the other shit we get on Amazon, they deliver it. The kids are so pumped. Dad, what's in the box? What's in the box? You know, it's a fucking Gwyneth Paltrow's head. Yeah. What's in the box? So everything they want to know, right? So it's a big deal when a package gets here to our house. So, I'm sorry that I have to be crass for a second, but I ordered lube on the internet. Mm-hmm. I'm almost 40. Fuck you for judging me, right? So,
not judging.
Amazon tells you exactly when it's going to get here, right? It's going to get here last Saturday. So I'm expecting this mainly, and not as a fiend, can't wait to use it, but my kids, they're at home on Saturday. I want to
Right, you don't want to be daddy ordered lube.
So I go to the grocery store and I get my stuff and I get home and the white Amazon bag is on the porch, no big deal. I'm like, okay, cool. This is perfect because now I'll just bring it in with the groceries incognito. And so I bring in a couple groceries. The kids are they're watching a show or upstairs playing. And I go back out. I grab the bag. I put it on the table. I finish unloading my groceries. And I pick up this bag. And it's supposed to have my one thing. And I feel it. And it's got three things in it.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, that's weird. So I look at the label. And it's not my house. Not my address.
Wait, is it one of your neighbors or is it someplace else distant?
Same street.
Okay.
It's got to be five houses away. Okay. I don't know. I don't know I haven't memorized like which house is what address.
Right, right.
So I'm like, oh, that's pretty weird. I was like, well, where's my stuff? And I thought, did this person get my stuff? And then I thought, like, well, I'm not giving back his package. Like, oh God, like, what if he like opened mine by mistake? And I had this weird next thought. This weird next thought was like, well, maybe I could use his sex stuff. Surely that's what's in this one. At that point, I'm like, fuck it, I'm opening his thing. Clearly opened mine. He must have opened mine. Because people are terrible, right? We're just disgusting people. And so
there's a lot of assumptions, a lot of conclusions being leapt to here. I love it.
So I open it up.
He even done it to me. I better.
Right. So, like, all right. If you want to know, I'll tell you what was in his package in a minute. But I put the package down, and I brought the groceries in. So now I got to go put all the shit away. So I'm putting stuff away, and goddamn it, the doorbell rings. Right, and I was like, oh, what's that? Okay, and I answer it. It's the guy, right?
Okay, wait. I think we got to know what's in his bag first before we go on. I think we got to know.
Chris, do you agree, Chris?
Yeah, I think that's
okay. Yeah. So in his bag, I open it up. First thing I pull out. Okay, and here's what I was talking about in the beginning with my disclaimer. It's gonna make it sound like I fucking made it up.
Okay.
Three things. The first thing I pull out, I swear to God, is when you play tennis, you wear the sweatbands on your forehead.
Right.
Okay.
It was a package of five of those.
Okay.
Okay.
The next thing is a tin of shoe polish. There's like greenish tint to the can.
Okay.
Tint shoe polish. And then the third thing was an oil diffuser for a cat. Heat it up. I know it does. And that's why it sounds like I made it up, these three things.
Okay, I believe it.
I swear to God, I should have taken a picture. That's what was in here. But I figured I was like incriminating myself, like legally.
Unless you were like using the cat oil diffuser instead of lube, then I would be like, all right, I'm checking out. But for now, you still got me.
So as soon as I open up his sex stuff, like I knew, like, okay, this needs to be put away. And so like, doorbell rings, the kids are like rushing to the door, because even now, like, no one comes to anyone's house anymore.
Right.
Like, no one goes to each other's houses. So they're like freaking out with joy, with elation. And they run to the door. My son's like unlocking it. He has no mask on. We have no idea what super spreader event is like on the other side of this door. Like, dragging the children away.
Wait, yeah. You thought there was a whole Trump rally like ringing your doorbell?
No, like, I'm going to open it up, and there's going to be, like, a cartoony-sized coronavirus, like, molecule at my door.
This is man, I think they delivered this here.
And so it's the guy whose package I got. He goes, are you, and I'm not going to say it, but he says my address, four numbers, and I was like, yeah, that's me. And then I go, oh, are you a 68, blah, blah, blah? And he's like, yeah. I was like, I got your package, too. I'm really freaking sorry. I opened it by mistake. I was expecting a package. Like, I just thought it was it. I'm really sorry. He goes, I opened yours, too. It's okay. I was like, oh. So my wife and my children are there, right? Like, you know. And so I was like, cool. And I grabbed his stuff, and I gave him his things. And he's like, thanks, man. Yeah. And then I'm about to shut the door, and he's about to walk away. He turns around, and he goes, it's okay. My wife and I, we order that stuff, too. It's like, okay. My wife has no idea what's in this package.
We were so close to having it not be awkward.
Right. So close. We almost got through it.
So I just like touched this. He like brushed my hand. It's like he did this. I go and I immediately wash my hands. You know, like I wash my hands.
Yeah. At least it wasn't like covered with lube when he brushed it, you know.
Didn't have a mask on or anything like that. Like, it was just, I don't know. I've been so like OCD, you know, in the past year, which I've never been. Wash my hands. And as I'm coming back out of the bathroom, my wife is like unfurling the packaging to go reach. Because, oh, sorry, let me rewind. The kids said, as I'm going to the bathroom, what's in the package? I said, hot sauce. I was just like, when I had kind of in the 36 chambers, like ready to go, you know, I was like to tell him. I wash my hands and I come back out, and my wife is
kind of not entirely a lie, you know?
Right, yeah, exactly.
It's mommy, daddy's hot.
Yeah.
I walk out, my wife's unfurling it, and I was like, it's not hot sauce, it's lube. And she like,
but she's like, red. She's already putting it on a burrito.
It's like squirting it in her mouth like this.
Oh man!
So, and then finally, we couldn't talk to each other about it because kids.
Right.
And finally, we got to and we had this conversation that was just so weird about like what. Anyway, like, so what do you think? Like, that was weird, right? He shouldn't have done that.
Shouldn't have done which part? Mentioned that he also buys the loot?
No. I'll start. He should have just put it in the goddamn mailbox, right?
Maybe. I mean, maybe.
I think he may have thought you had his.
Yeah. Or maybe they're swingers and he thought it was like a good opportunity to like invite
That's
you.
That's what I thought at first because I was like, what's the context? Is he saying like he wants to come over and like him and his wife like fuck us or something? Like, I didn't want that to happen. I hope that's not going to happen. You don't think he's outside right now, do you?
Probably not.
You know, at his house, he's having the same conversation, exactly same conversation with his cat. He's like, yeah, look.
Right. I think
that was weird, wasn't it?
I think he wants to come over here and fuck us, Mittens.
That's right.
You know, that kind of reminds me of a thing that I experienced, which was my wife's extended family. It was like one of her cousin's grandmas or something, right? But they're all, her family's all from Kentucky, right? And they're all big UK fans. Somebody in her extended family, I think it was like her cousin's grandma on a different branch of the family, had a license plate, because she's such a big fan of Kentucky basketball, that said, I love KY. Right. And so she's driving around with this I love KY, and her grandkids didn't have the heart to tell her, like, grandma, that could mean a couple different things, you know.
You gotta run stuff past 12-year-olds. That's just all there is to it,
right?
Do you remember that ad campaign for Sunny Delight where it was like, everybody loves the D, you know?
Yeah, okay, perfect.
Oh, got so to run this stuff past 12-year-olds.
Oh. Right. Do a little quality control on those ads.
Exactly.
That reminds me of the you know who Donald Glover is? The Childish Gambino guy?
Yeah.
He's also a stand-up comedian. And I don't know if this is still his Twitter handle, but in his stand-up special, I think it was a stand-up special or an interview, he mentioned his Twitter handle for the longest time was Don Glover.
Okay.
So when you push those together,
looks like Dong Lover.
Isn't that great? Yeah, that's so funny.
Well, is there anything else you want to plug, Chris, or anything? I mean, obviously we've got the website out there. People should check out. Is there anything else you'd like to turn people on to or direct people toward to check you out?
No, you know, that's sort of the hub. You know, if you bounce over there and see that, then you will find links out to everything else I do. I do some political writing on a different blog, and there's links to that. And, you know, I'm always welcome. You know, people are always welcome to follow or friend my public Facebook page, and there's a link to that. So, you know, once you're on that blog, it's all there.
Right.
Like it's a real hub there.
Nice. Well, and just for our listeners, I know Brent and I, we've talked about, putting a backlog of episodes up on our website. And I think I've kind of figured out the best way to do that because we do have more storage now. We can post more episodes at a time, but there's still a limit of how many episodes we can have up at a time. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to start like maybe the first and second, or no, I'm sorry, like the second and fourth Wednesday of every month. Brent, I think I'm going to post like episode one so people can go back and check out our earlier episodes if they are so inclined. I'll have one episode up for a couple weeks, and then I'll take it down and put up episode 2. So each episode will be up for a couple weeks, so people can kind of check out our backlog if they're interested. You can always also follow us on Facebook and Twitter, Danger Explosion. You can follow me on Twitter, President Tight Rhymes, at Prez Tight Rhymes. Probably the most interesting place. And then, other than that, really, really appreciate your time, Chris. Appreciate you, hanging out with us. And it's good to talk to you. Like I said, you're my go-to on Facebook for any kind of memes or content. Like, just everything you post and everything you say just, like, aligns with what I'm thinking and feeling so well. And it's, I just want you to know, like, it's a huge, like, I appreciate it, you know?
That's so really sweet. Thank you.
All right. Well, Brent, anything for you, anything we need to know before we get out of here?
I'm just glad I got to tell my story. I'm really bad at keeping secrets, and you can't really tell an inappropriate story to anyone like you work with.
Right, like especially working.
I'm glad we were here to give you the medium for your lube story.
Thanks, man. it's real pleasure to meet you, man. Like you're like you seem like really grounded, and it's yeah, you're a real cool guy to talk to, dude. Yeah.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, gentlemen, this has been Danger Explosion.